I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to yet another episode of Everyone is Hot, the podcast that talks about your favorite stealth sex symbols and their film that turned you on to them. I'm Michael Stevens.
And I'm Shelley Brooks. And Michael, we have got a very exciting return guest today, do we not?
Oh my God. Look, y'all, much like Barry Convex at the end of Videodrome, we are bursting with tumors filled with enthusiasm for today's guest, film producer and vice president of fucking production at Faye Pictures, Lindsay Blair Goldner, y'all. Oh, my
God. The children are back.
They're here. They've been waiting for you.
Oh, my God.
Back, Lindsay. We're so
our
glad
brood.
To have you. Yes. Our brood.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me to come back. It is truly an honor and a privilege.
Well, we had to get our resident Canada and Cronenberg expert for today's episode. Yeah. Lindsay, what are we going to be talking about?
Today, we're going to be talking about the unofficial trilogy of David Cronenberg specifically. So he's had a couple kind of repeat films. People try to mash them together, but this one is the most consistent.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about Videodrome, Existence, and Crimes of the Future, and what Cronenberg sees as the future of sex through these three films.
I absolutely love this approach.
Yes. So
I don't know. I actually do know about y'all. Y'all are very familiar with the works of David Cronenberg. I am familiar with Crash, Maps to the Stars, and History of Violence. So yeah. I watched some shit.
I'm definitely less so than Lindsay. So
yeah. So we have a variety of different levels, and I'm excited about that. A little something for everyone listening.
Yes.
So I'm very curious about y'all's relationships with these movies and specifically your viewing experience this week and how your week was generally.
Yeah, Lindsay, how about you go first? So did you rewatch just before this?
Yes. So I rewatched the films. I've seen every Cronenberg film. I'm wearing my Cronenberg shirt, which I know this is a podcast.
Love
imagine
it.
Me wearing a shirt. Funnily enough, last Sunday, so a week ago, I was in Kingston for the film festival with a project of mine, and they had these official film festival t-shirts that's just like references to every Cronenberg movie.
Rules.
So I was in Toronto. Here, I can get a little pic.
Yeah, we got to get a picture for the gram.
Speaking of
our dependence on technology.
So I was in Kingston, Ontario.
Oh, wait, I took the video.
Oh, perfect. Even better. And I didn't have a lot of time, to be honest. This week was a big week for a new film of mine. But when I got back to New York 2 days ago. I got back on Thursday night. I rewatched Videodrome, and then I started Existence, finished it on Friday, and then to be honest, I couldn't rewatch Crimes of the Future. I couldn't find a stream. I shouldn't say that as a film producer. I was like trying to watch it. But I was reading reviews of it because I didn't see it that long ago. So I feel fairly refreshed. But I'm curious, Shelley and Michael, how was your viewing experiences with these three films?
Ooh, Shelley. Yeah. I'm curious.
It's interesting. So I've seen Videodrome a couple of times. So I just went back and kind of, you know, scanned some scenes for this, and I saw Crimes of the Future a bit ago. So I did the same thing for that. And then I had never seen Existence, actually. So I was, you know, this is not the ideal viewing experience, but it was a bit of a crazy week at work. So I was kind of watching in bits and pieces throughout the week as I could find the time. But it was very interesting because, you know, speaking of having a crazy week at work, I work with social media. So watching these titles as I'm thinking about my current job there, and as I've been kind of despairing about the amount of time that I stare at my computer and my phone, was a very interesting experience. And Michael, a lot of these were new for you, right?
A lot of these were new for me. So I was on, I attempted a social media detox this week, which I absolutely fucking blundered. it was just kind of a stressful, trying week of labor, spiritually, mentally, you know. But I was like, you know what? I got a new experience set for the end of the day. And so I did watch the trailers to each of these movies first because I didn't know shit about them. And when you don't know shit about a movie, it's kind of a blessing. It's absolutely a blessing that you got to take advantage of. So I wanted the whole, like, all right, let me see the trailer. Let me see if I can stomach some of the shit because I'm squeamish as fuck. Like if I see reposted. No, don't be sorry. I'm very grateful for this list of movies. Like, emotionally, I identify with the character that Jude Law plays in Existence. Like, he's so new. I felt very new to these movies. They were a lot to take in. But man, oh man, that ending scene of Videodrome was like beautiful. It was beautiful.
So good.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
It almost makes you hate James Woods less because he like once was interesting.
Oh my, that's the thing. I like, it's one of my most shameful, you know, feelings, but I do love James Woods. Like I don't love present day James Woods, but he's got so many performances that like I really love. And he's so good at playing like a scumbag who's interesting.
Yeah.
And now it makes sense that he's so good at playing scumbags, but oh, it's like heartbreaking seeing him in something like this and being like, God, how far he's fallen.
Oh God. Even a little bit earlier in the third act where, you know, Barry Convex is like shredding apart. Like, God damn, I've never seen no shit like that in my life. I've never seen that shit before. And it was nice to feel that feeling. Just truly such a horrifying, so many of the things that I've seen this week. I'm like really looking forward to watching some of his earlier stuff, like Rabid and the Brood, and I'm looking forward to The Fly, which
you're gonna love it.
My brother once described the movie to me. He was like, "Oh yeah, one time that movie was playing at a birthday party, and I was eating a double cheeseburger from McDonald's, and I threw it up immediately." So I'm looking forward to that experience.
I find that film so very sexual despite how gross it is. Like, I mean, maybe this is the Jeff Goldblum thing that I just can't get rid of, but like even as he's falling apart, which you'll see in the film, I still find him so hot.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, Michael, I think you're gonna particularly love The Fly because it's like very romantic as
I love a Beauty and the Beast kind of vibe.
Isn't
he just trying to become closer with his wife? Isn't that the main thing? Like, they're just trying to become the perfect family.
That's actually more in the sequel, but in this one it really is like he's trying to transcend and like you know, advance this technology, and that becomes like his obsession, like even more than this budding relationship he's having. That was, you're gonna love it. It's
okay, delicious. Excited. So
Well, one thing that I definitely want us to touch on later is our threshold for gore and, you know, how that has affected our viewing experiences with these movies. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, Michael, I think that we might want to get a little warmed up.
Oh, actually, we do want to get warmed up. And before we get warmed up, I do want to run through the synopses of these three movies.
Just you are so absolutely right.
Those of you who are unfamiliar, like myself, with these specific movies, just prepare yourselves for. So I'll kick off the first one. So the first one is Videodrome. A programmer at a TV station that specializes in adult entertainment searches for the producers of a dangerous and bizarre broadcast.
Very enticing. I will give a little synopsis for Existence. A game designer on the run from assassins must play her latest virtual reality creation with a marketing trainee to determine if the game has been damaged.
Ooh, fascinating. And Crimes of the Future. Humans adapt to a synthetic environment with new transformations and mutations. This partner caprice, Saul Tenser, celebrity performance artist, publicly showcases the metamorphosis of his organs in avant-garde performances.
There's a lot of goddamn assassinations in this movie.
Everyone's trying to kill everyone.
Political intrigue.
Does Cronenberg have a movie where everybody's just sitting around a table, chilling, having like a nice family meal? Does he have any like four quadrant family features? Could probably
come
out.
Does he have
Christmas
like
time?
A straight story?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I kind of feel like his most commercial is probably Dead Zone, but Dead Ringers, yeah. No. Just nothing. Yeah, no, he's not a family movie guy. Yeah, it's just not his thing.
By the end of this episode, we're gonna craft a pitch for a potential family film that David Cronenberg can direct.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Let's figure that out. Let's have it baking and put it on the back burner for now.
Yes. Just deal.
Excellent. Yes. Well, we can ruminate on that.
Yes.
As we play. Got ahead of myself before, but now it's time for the sexy trivia game. Michael, what is the sexy trivia game?
Well, it's just a little appetizer to get the listeners slick for some movie chatting. I'll kick us off. Letter A. In Videodrome, David Cronenberg had to double James Woods for the scene in which Max Wren has a helmet put on his head because both were afraid to a point that he might be electrocuted by it.
Brave David.
Brave David.
Lindsay, David. Can you give us number B?
Yes. I want to put on a voice now because I have to follow Michael. It was
you do.
Okay.
You do have to put on a
Come
voice.
On.
All right, I'm going to give it a go. In Existence, Jennifer Jason Leigh insisted on keeping one of the prop pods with her in between filming to strengthen the maternal bond that you see in the film.
That's Lord have mercy.
Oh my God, I love the southern twang.
I could, I don't know, it went there. It just went there naturally.
It certainly did.
Follow your instincts. Ooh, we love a
Texas
little regional
meets
flavor.
Toronto. Very good.
Thank you.
I'm going to finish us off with number C. For Crimes of the Future, the four-hour extensive makeup prosthetics that models 40 ear replicas on contemporary Greek dancer Thasos Karahalios' body was so complex that he could not eat or drink during the whole process of application.
What a frustrating day that must have been.
Hard day. Did that gross you out, Michael?
Oh, God, yeah. Imagine being a dancer, not being able to drink water all day.
I know.
It's my favorite drink.
That does have one of my favorite punchlines, that scene where he's like doing this crazy dance and then it's followed by being like, the ears don't even work.
Yeah, yeah. <It's fucking dumb. laughs> Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Crimes of the Future made me laugh a lot.
Yeah.
It's quite funny.
The art world.
Very funny.
Yeah, no, the art world like stuff.
Oh, sorry. Keep interrupting because I'm not watching the video. I was just saying, I think it's like a funny criticism of like the avant-garde art world or art performance scene, kind of similar, likened to the square, but it's almost like more pointed because it's less overt.
Oof. Yes. I absolutely have to watch the square. I saw Triangle of Sadness and that was, that connection makes sense, but now I got to see the whole deal.
And it is interesting that in the previous two movies that we watched in this, you know, informal trilogy, that there are these like, you know, mass entertainment forms of TV and video games. And then it becomes this like very niche thing of performance art in this one. But it still has the presence of those TVs everywhere, which is, I thought, really interesting. Anyway.
Definitely.
So I guess just to start off our conversation, like why should more people be watching David Cronenberg movies?
I think that's a great question. I have a personal connection to David Cronenberg, as you know, because you've invited me here as like the resident Torontonian on the podcast. He is like the hometown hero of filmmakers in Toronto. He's really put Toronto on the map before Drake, well before Justin Bieber and Rob Ford. There was David fucking Cronenberg. And granted, he made his early films actually in Montreal, but he's totally a Toronto guy. He places his films there. He's not afraid of showcasing Toronto in his films. They play a character in his movies, specifically in Videodrome and Crash and The Fly, where you can see like Kensington Market in the 1980s. It's very fun. And I love that he like truly respects where he's from and doesn't try to hide it or turn it into like some weird version of New York, which people like to do when they film in Toronto. Weird. And also, I think he's the grandfather of body genre films, not just body horror, which I think is something people are very familiar with, but I'd say arguably most of his films have to do with the human body, including being more like Eastern Promises, like Dead Ringers, very psychological. So body genre, I think, is the style of films that he is known for and he's kind of helped popularize.
Yeah, absolutely. So like, I think we probably talked about this a little bit when we last spoke with you, but do you remember when you first started getting into Cronenberg?
Yes, I do. Because I wasn't allowed to watch horror films as a kid, which I did mention on the last one. I was not allowed. My parents are like, you know, they're like cool, liberal Canadians, but they, when we were kids, my brother and I weren't allowed to watch The Simpsons or like anything that might have swearing in it. Yeah, like weird shit like that. So of course, that's why I'm such a freak now, is because that stuff was repressed for so long. I wasn't allowed to watch it. So then all I wanted to do was watch shit that I wasn't allowed to. And let's be honest, kids find ways, right?
Like, oh my God.
We find our ways. We have friends. Oh, we have internet.
We got grandma's basement. I'm just going to go out of grandma's basement, turn to IFC, and watch Secretary 10 times. Like,
try and stop me.
Try and stop me. Try and stop me, grandma. You're taking a nap right now.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because I realize, and it's kind of like the catalyst to what got me into filmmaking, is my Uncle Jay, who's my mom's younger brother, he's always been obsessed with movies. And when I was a kid, he gifted me movies for my birthday. He'd give me DVDs. And it was when I turned 15, he gave me a DVD copy of Dead Ringers. And I have 100% certainty that my mother had no idea what the film was, because she wouldn't have allowed it. But he gave that film to me, and it kind of, catapulted me into being pretty obsessed with David Cronenberg. I thought, holy shit, who is Jeremy Irons? What is this movie? This is incredible. I need to see more of it. And that was kind of the beginning of the end for me. Because then my parents couldn't stop me from renting Cronenberg at the video store. And I also started to look like I was, could be 18 and rent these films on my own. Granted, the clerk at Rogers Video didn't card me, so I was fine. Mm-hmm. After that, it was like the vault was open and I couldn't stop. Thanks, Uncle Jay.
Yeah. So, I mean, Dead Ringer is obviously one of the like classic Cronenberg titles, but not quite the same kind of like body horror that we're looking at in these ones.
And just so I understand for context, what's the gist with Dead Ringers?
Take it away, Shelley.
No, you go for it.
It's like twin gynecologists who like share, they look identical, and they kind of, there's like a romantic element to this film where one of them is more overt and outward than the other. Again, I'm forgetting characters' names, but both the twins are played by Jeremy Irons, and they start passing off, the one who's more sociable starts passing off his ex-lovers to his less social twin. And then, so then there becomes this conflict when the less social one falls in love with one of the these women, and it catapults into this identity crisis that turns into isolation. And it's totally brilliant and disturbing. And you can see as they kind of slowly start to descend into madness.
And does Jeremy Irons play both of the, oh my God, this, yes. I got it. One, I got to see this. Two, this sounds like a dream that I had. Yeah, this sounds like a dream that I had. On. I had a dream that I went on a date with myself many years ago. and then ate myself. It was weird. I don't know.
Like literally Whoa. Ate yourself?
Like I ate myself. Like I went back and I fucking ate myself. It was weird.
Wow. Ooh, yeah. I would love to hear what your therapist.
I gotta talk to my therapist about that. I got a lot of fucking weird dreams, which is kind of what I loved about watching these movies. I was like, this feels like a nightmare I've had.
So funny. Yeah, 100%. And famously, Jeremy Irons, which I think I might have brought this up on your last appearance as well, famously seems kind of into incest with his son.
I hate this piece of trivia though, Shelley. It's so depressing. It's so depressing because I think he said this quote like after he did Lolita. Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, no, he's got like multiple things. Like I remember I read an interview where he was like, my son's beautiful body, and then he's got that famous HuffPo thing where he's like, if we pass a gay marriage, mightn't a father marry a son?
Oh, no. Oh, right. Oh, no. Shelly.
It's great stuff. As we were saying, Dead Ringers, not the body horror aspect of Cronenberg. So when did you first get into his more kind of like overt horror films?
So I think it was when I saw The Fly. That would have been like the first of his overt body horror stuff, and certainly one of his bigger commercial works. First, I think was Dead Zone, and then The Fly, or The Fly and then Dead Zone. But those were his big two commercial works. I saw The Fly and then Dead Zone, and then I went back to Scanners and Rabid. And I just remember being like obsessed with the artistry of the body horror on screen. I loved the expression of the makeup. And, you know, as a kid who was like in that early 2000s, like starting to get really into horror around like, you know, the early 2000s era, a lot more CGI was being implemented, which I found always kind of just unappealing. I never really liked. Yeah. Like it just kind of irked me in a way that on-screen effects and practical effects never did. I loved the artistry of them. So I became really obsessed with watching films that were known for the, you know, their on-screen effects. And Cronenberg is clearly the master of it. And I love the way that he iterates body design on screen. Naked Lunch is another one too, where this was unadaptable book and he somehow adapted it and made it as grotesque as possible. But I find them really palatable because it's not that weird CGI, like, what's the word I'm looking for? When it seems real, but it's not uncanny valley.
Yeah.
It's just way more organic, and it feels nice. It's like nice to see an emphasis on that kind of organic material. It makes it less gross to me, you know?
I absolutely, yes, you put the words, the feeling that I had at the end of Videodrome where the guy's tumor's fucking... I had to read the Wikipedia spoilers for each one of these movies because I was watching with an 8-year-old boy that was my inner child. Oh. And
I thought that was going to be a nephew. And I was like,
No, I was worried too. No. I was watching with my younger self who is afraid of these movies. And I had to be like, it's not real. It's not real. Like, you know, it's, you know, the guy who plays Barry Convex was probably, he probably finished rapping and he took a look down at the fucking puppet that they made of this guy, you know, having tumors burst through his fucking body. And he probably got a kick out of it. And he's like, oh, that's crazy. Oh, I'm going to pick up my kids. And, you know, it's, oh, God. I had to like tell myself that it was just shit that somebody made up. And it was beautiful and enjoyable to watch because of that.
Yeah, I think it also helps to know that a lot of actors who work with Cronenberg are repeat offenders. They keep coming back to work with him because they have such a good time on set. And I think famously, one of my favorite cameos is with Willem Dafoe in Existence.
Yes.
He hasn't done a film with Cronenberg since, but he's been dying to. And he like bugs him all the time. He's like, please put me in one of your movies. I think he really wanted to be in, what was the Freudian one? A Dangerous Method. He asked to be in that film, but he's not. He just did Existence.
But we did get Viggo in that one, who we have again in Crimes of the Future.
The Vigo era.
Yes, he's in his Vigo era.
But so, it is. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say that, like, it is true that there is something about, like, seeing. I don't know if it's, like, both the visual qualities of the effects themselves or the fact that, like, there is, like, that air of seeing something constructed that, like, gives you a little bit of distance. So, like, because, I mean, there's some violence in Existence that, like, I found generally. Like, genuinely really upsetting because it looked more realistic.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas, like, the stuff in Crimes of the Future and in Videodrome, like, really don't bother me at all. I'm happy to see blood and guts and stuff because, like, it's very explicit, but it looks a bit more artificial maybe. So you can step back a little bit and not feel totally. As queasy about it.
I'm curious what was, like, a trigger moment for you in Existence. Like, what kind of body harm or violence or what kind of special effects in the film really, really got you?
Well, Michael and I were talking earlier that the shooting in the Chinese restaurant, we both found that, like, pretty disturbing, both because of the kind of, like, you know, weird racial elements to
it.
But also just, yeah, the, like, seeing the open head at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, it's one thing to see, you know, Vigo's stomach open and, like, pulling out, like, various organs because you're like, that's not real.
There's a silliness to it. Like, I could go, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, but you see someone get shot in the face and you're like, oh, that happens to people.
That just happens. That's just something straight up happens.
No. Oh, God, I'm going to say something so naive. But as a Canadian, like, I truly never think about gun violence until I, like, move to the States in, like, a significant way because it was never a threat until.
Yeah.
When I'm in America. And my mom has to remind me, she's like, don't pick fights with people, which is something I used to do, I guess. Don't pick fights with people, they might have a gun. And that's something I never grew up with. So it's like a weird cultural thing for me,
that's
too.
Interesting.
But yeah. Yeah. No gun violence. Very little gun violence in Toronto, like minuscule. Yeah.
I got the same thing from older family members, like growing up, of like, if they were like on the verge of road rage or something, they would tell each other, like, don't fight with this person because if they have a gun in their car, like, we don't want to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
But you bring up a really good point, Shelley, because it wasn't until I was rewatching these films. Videodrome has a moment too of, like, interesting Asian fetishization in the beginning of the film, which I, you know, probably didn't clock when I was younger. But certainly now I was like, that's weird. And then again, watching Existence, like, that's interesting that's the character who's like the double agent. But spoilers for all these films, right?
Spoilers for all, we spoil shit all the time.
They know what they're getting into when they listen to this.
Yeah. We say in the social media to watch the movies. And if they didn't watch the movies, we're going to spoil them.
You're on
it's
your own, babe.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know. But yes, it did feel weird. And this is something that I chose not to investigate for this podcast only because I felt like that was a much larger discussion. Is the, like, inherent whiteness of Cronenberg films. It doesn't reflect a Toronto that I grew up in or live in. There's something strange about that. And I would say a sci-fi genre in totality, there is an inherent whiteness to science fiction that I've never quite understood.
Yeah.
But I think that's, like, a much larger topic to dig into, maybe.
Yeah.
It is. It's a very interesting topic. Because watching this, I was just like, "Damn, there really ain't no black people watching this movie." Watching all of these movies, but it's particularly during those kind of scenes where, you know, the only where you see Asian people, kind of in this fetishized or kind of a victim kind of place. It was weird to watch, but I think it comes from, you know, cultural blind spots that, you know, any artist can have, but definitely a conversation for another day that I'd like to have after I've read more books.
I also feel ill-equipped to address it, like, in its totality, but I will say something that you were talking about, Shelley, that I think is interesting, is finding the violence that, you know, Viggo Mortensen's character endures in Crimes of the Future not being as difficult to watch versus those other moments where they are being victimized and violated in ways that are against consent. Right.
Yeah.
So I think, like, even Debbie Harry's character, like, she goes after the violence. She wants violence enacted on her. So it's almost like we as the viewer can accept that violence and enjoy it on screen versus, like, that's a character who didn't want that to happen. Interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a level there of I guess consenting behavior that maybe is what's at the touchstone of what you're talking about.
And that's definitely a huge thing in Videodrome, because I mean, James Woods's character is like so like horrified by her burning herself with a cigarette. But I mean, he's happy to watch, you know, the Videodrome footage of, you know, seemingly unconsenting people being tortured. So,
right.
Yeah. Like, it's interesting that character's sort of arc, and that, like, you know, in the beginning of the film, that he's clearly like so comfortable with violence unless someone's actually deriving pleasure from it.
And isn't that interesting? Because that's the whole point, right? He's trying to drive up viewership by getting this like really intense content that he's like, there's no way at first it's real. There's no way. It's just, it's enticing. It's it's sexual in a way that it made me think of revisiting my film school days, Linda Williams' body horror. So that was like a thing. She's a cultural theorist, and she talks about how women's bodies are utilized in films to convey emotion. In the horror film, they are violated in order to scare us. In the melodrama, they are crying in order to trigger our tears. And in pornography, they're penetrated in order to turn us on. So women's bodies being used as these like catalysts for emotion. And so I think he's like kind of the dean of that in Videodrome, is he's like looking to see violation upon others in order for, you know, for him and his viewers to have the self-pleasure. But the moment it becomes too real, aka it affects him, that it's no longer pleasurable.
Yeah. So like in Cronenberg, we've got this concept of the new sex. Like, do you want to elaborate on what that means to you?
Yes. Okay. So I'm like holding my notes because I'm like, this is so fun. Oh my God.
Homer's got a book, a notebook.
I was so excited to revisit these films because, of course, and this is something that I talk about on my TikTok, right? I've been doing this media literacy thing on TikTok recently. Because I noticed, I realized people don't maybe learn media literacy in school. When I was a kid in Canada, we had these advertisements on TV, these like paid ads from the concerned children's advertisers. And it was like a house hippo, a miniature hippo in your house eating your toast. And then it would pan out and you'd see a TV set, be like, that looked really real. But you knew it wasn't real, right? And this is shit that I grew up with in Canada. Wow. So I saw this discourse. It's pretty dope. I'll send you the link to this infomercial. Yes.
I actually need a media literacy education because I believe everything I see on television and in the internet.
Well, you and I think like the majority of people now, because this is not like it, for me, it was something we were taught in English and like in our English class, media class in like grade 4 or 5. But it's something that I think it's like an elective now. There was a funny discourse happening on TikTok. I'm just going to do a little background. Funny discourse about the film American Beauty, where there was a video posted about it and the comments were exceedingly critical. Like, could you believe that film won awards? That movie glorifies pedophilia. And I remember being like, are people watching this? Like, it's a 2-minute clip of someone reacting to American Beauty for the first time and being like, the film is saying pedophilia is good. That, like, the whole point of the movie is that, you know, Kevin Spacey's character is scum. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Fantasy, and he has to die. Again, spoilers. Sorry, folks. But
a subtle touch in that movie.
No, and it kind of hits you over the head with the point. Like, I would even contend it's not a very good movie. I don't like it. But
you and me both, sister.
Yeah, but I did this, like, whole post on TikTok being like, guys, you need media literacy. Like, you can't read what's on screen and understand it as being, like, that's fact. You have to like read between the lines and understand like there are editing cues and different cues in films that allude to us that this is not how you should be interpreting it. We're making this is a critical stance of the subject matter on screen.
Right.
So when I was going back into these films, which I know and love so well, I was like, I'm going to just make sure my critical thinking cap is really on.
Oh, hell yeah.
Put that baby on and like take notes. So that's what I did. And that's why I'm holding this funny little book, which no one can see as they're listening to this podcast. So something
we love it.
I really was trying to figure out, I'm like, what is this unofficial trilogy, which Cronenberg himself has said, you know, there's a through line with these three films. And I was trying to create, but he doesn't overtly go into what it is. And I was trying to create that through line. The first thing that I think is really interesting is both Videodrome and Existenz were commercial failures. So they were his original screenplays, and then Existenz was the second original screenplay after Videodrome, and then he shortly after shooting Existenz wrote Crimes of the Future, but it took him many years to make it. Right. So I think it's interesting. He was writing them all in the same kind of mindset. And I think to me, ultimately at the core of each of these films is bodily transformations reflecting the character's inner desires, which in turn reflect sociopolitical ideas of like modern technology and how it affects us. So in each of these films, they very much hearken to their specific time setting. In 1983 with Videodrome, there's like an anxiety about this increased technology and access to information through broadcast television.
Yeah.
In 1999, we have a bit of the Y2K fear seeping in with the increased advance of gaming technology and alternate reality. Right. And now looking to 2022, we're living in an increasingly inhabitable world with, you know, pollution, et cetera. So how does the body adapt? And I think what the new sex is essentially this concept of how do humans adapt to a world with these increasing anxieties about technology and the world around them. And I ultimately find that Cronenberg is saying, you know, in a way, I see him as an optimist. I think he's a humanist. I think he really believes that like humans can continue to create community and find new ways to like enjoy their lived realities. I think it's also important to know that he's an atheist. So a lot of these films do not really contend to an afterlife. There's no redeeming arc that takes the characters beyond the reality that they're in. They have to cope with the situations they're in. And oftentimes they're doing the best that they can to do so, to survive. So the new sex looks like a few things. I think in Videodrome, we see a character played by James Woods. Again, I always just like to think of him as stuck in that time, like when he was interesting in art house. Cool guy. This increased drawn, I guess, attention to violence, bodily violence enacted on women, and it doesn't feel real. This is this kind of new sex. But the sensory aspect of that is how the film or how the television both is penetrating the viewer with its broadcast signals and then physically penetrating him. And then I think what's interesting about the new sex in Existence is the gaming port itself, of course, a penetrative device, and how kind of creating a shared consciousness among the players of the game. That's like the new sex. That's what's enjoyable for them. They don't really know where they're at, but they have to do this together. It builds this interesting community. And then, of course, surgery being the new sex in Crimes of the Future. Humans no longer feel pain. They're riddled with cancer. And this is like their new form of enjoyment, but also it's a mode of survival. They have to take these things out in order to live. Or, I mean, it depends on how you both interpret the ending. Does Viggo Mortensen live? Or is he eating that plastic and dying?
Right. I think he's eating that plastic and dying.
I don't know. I think I might kind of disagree. I think that like thinking of Cronenberg as potentially an optimist, like I think that there is something appealing about reading that ending as this sort of like beatific, because I mean, you know, it's been famously commented on that it's like a reflection of, you know, the Passion of Joan of Arc in the way that it's framed. And that's sort of like, even if he doesn't believe in a god in the way that like a Joan of Arc believes in a god, that there is some sort of like, I guess almost like divinity and immensity to just humankind, and this idea that like even if the, you know, world is being destroyed around us, that like there is like a certain like almost like divinity in the process of evolution, that like humans could continue to survive even if it's by eating plastic.
I think that I think you're onto something with that. I don't have like a strong opinion either way about the ending of that film, but where I find Cronenberg's optimism is almost like in his inherent belief that like people will find ways to cope, and if that means killing yourself to cope, that's still a way of coping. And there's it's dark, but
that's kind of what I felt. I was like, oh, he's dying and it's his choice.
Something else to go back to the new sex. The idea of the new sex also doesn't have to be inherently sexual. And I'll try to explain what I'm thinking about this here. So like something like the act of, you know, the hand going to James Wood's torso, or even the way that, you know, Viggo Mortensen's like zipper wound is filleted, and like even the way the ports are licked on to plug in for Existence. These in themselves are not sexual acts in the way that we know sexual acts. But I think Cronenberg is such a sexual being that these and it's so inherent to like just being a human that these moments are kind of, I like the way he normalizes sex in his film.
I loved those. All right. Okay. I'm sorry.
Please.
the vaginal stomachs in Videodrome and Crimes of the Future. I absolutely love those scenes. Particularly the scene where Viggo Mortensen has like the zipper in his stomach. It was just so interesting to watch. And I haven't felt look, I saw Magic Mike 3 over the weekend and I felt nothing the whole time. So like it was just kind of nice to feel anything again. And then in Existence, where they have the like their buttholes, right? They're buttholes.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. Like the whole time I was just like, there's no way those are not meant to be buttholes.
Yeah, you're lubing them up and then you're
lubing them up. I was like, yo, this is like I know what that is. but it was just so interesting to see because I was like, damn, there's no way. I mean, there's no other way we would be able to see this kind of stuff. Like we outside of this kind of movie, in like a big popular, you know, popcorn movie kind of a way. I don't know if Existence was a popcorn movie in its time.
Bit of a blockbuster failure there. Like it kind of came and went. And it's very sad to me because I find Existence to be like such a profound movie about like increased fear of technology and alternative reality. I think it works so well as a companion piece to The Matrix, which came out the same year and obviously was a lot more popular. But you can see its influence on later films about the same subject matter.
Yeah, and I think also the casting of Jude Law is so interesting for me because, I mean, one of my favorite movies is AI, and he's, of course, wonderful in that movie. And, yeah, I think all of these films, AI and this trilogy, like, you know, are questioning the idea of, like, how do we define a human? Like, when do we continue to be a human, or are we something else? Like,
oh, my God, that's such a good point. I love the mention of AI. And let me just throw in Gattaca. As a if we wanted to go down the branch of like the Jude Law body trilogy, I feel like there's an opportunity there.
Oh yeah,
another episode. All right, see you in a couple weeks.
I love that.
Can you just come by every day? We'll have a chat.
But that's so on point what you're saying. Like, where does the human body end and technology begin? Or are they one and the same? Where does this reality end and the other one begin? Which is a big question in Existence. But I think what Cronenberg ultimately, his thesis in these films is like, they are one and the same. And when you accept them and learn how to live with them, that's when you can, you know, your human reality, it begins and ends with the body. And technology can be a part of that, or it doesn't. You can elect to not have it be part of that. But it is, it begins and ends with you. So I that's why I see him as a humanist in that regard. And
I think it's so interesting comparing Crimes of the Future to these other two, because the other two are like so specifically about sort of the melding of the human body with technology. Whereas Crimes of the Future, it's a bit more of like an organic process. Like obviously it's like influenced by this like, you know, technological world around them, but it's also just like an organic evolution that people are undergoing in response to their environment. And even then, like, even if it's not that sort of like explicit, like, how do we define the divide between human and machine? Even then they're questioning, like, at what point do you stop being a human? And are you just like something completely different? Like, if you can be a little boy, like eating a trash can, like, are you still like a human little boy?
And I think it's fascinating too, that Cronenberg elects to create very organic looking biotechnology. So everything in Existence, you know, the technology in Videodrome and the supporting life technology in Crimes of the Future all look like these humanistic, creepy, Cronenbergian is like now a word. Thanks, Rick and Morty, for that. But like this kind of technology that feels organic, like it's a living, breathing thing. In fact, the game pods in Existence are made from amphibian eggs or like reproductive organs. So they are inherently natural of the natural world until, and I think this is interesting, I don't know if I have a conclusion about this yet, but watching the end of Existence again, where you get back into what is perceivably the real world, where the technology looks like what we understand to be technology. You know, it's gamified. It's hard metal. It's not this bioorganic mess.
We see that normal guns instead of the fried chicken guns.
Exactly. But is that the real reality, or is it just right. another layer of the game? And it's interesting that that's the where he leaves us to question, like, what is, where is the end line here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if, like, we're experiencing this, you know, I guess you could call it a delusion or alternate reality, but if we're experiencing that en masse, like, if everyone is, like, part of Videodrome, then is that reality now rather than what we perceived as reality before? Because if that's what we're all collectively experiencing, like, you know, if they complete their project, then who's to say what is reality? Does that become reality then?
Oh my God, this whole conversation is making me think of my relationship with social media. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah.
Go on. What's it specifically bringing up for you?
I don't know. It's very easy to get. It's very easy for me to get very pessimistic about what social media is doing to people, what it's doing to our minds. And I'm a person that works in front of a computer all day, so my connection to my body is like so most of the time. But it is nice to adopt an alternative view of a person's one's relationship with social media, which is probably the dominating, prevailing, you know, media that everybody's fucking using. And you can use it or it can use you. But I do like just the idea that they're, you don't have, it doesn't have to be a fucking bleak thing. Like, it can be a tool to build community. It doesn't have to totally. And I don't know, like, what point I'm really trying to get at. But these are just things that have been on my mind as I've been watching these movies and trying to, like, use social media and honestly, like, be away from screens and be in my body more. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, in these movies, like, you know, part of it is that this technology that, you know, comes to dominate people's existences, like, you know, is under the influence of groups with specific interests. Social media is, you know, the purview of private companies who can do anything they want with them at a whim. Like, you know, I know we can technically buy land, but, like, you know, for all intents and purposes, you can't, like, own the grass. So, you know, it's like there's something to be said for, like, the physical world outside of these, like, mediated realities that they're experiencing in these movies.
I mean, this is, like, a really big existential topic, but I like the way that Cronenberg approaches it because it makes it, he does it in a way that's, like, it's not overwhelming to think about what are we doing to the environment when, like, you know, winter in New York this year has been abysmal. It's basically been, like, light spring. Like, imagining a future where humans evolve to be able to eat plastics is, like, this kind of coping mechanism for the scariness of the future. And, you know, we see, like, our generation, there's, like, a whole influx of people who are electing not to have children because they have anxieties about, you know, what's coming next. I don't think your relationship with social media and that kind of fear is unfounded. I think it's very truthful. I would actually love to see Cronenberg approach a specifically social media interface as, like, the threat in the film.
Oh my God. Like, I kept saying that. We got to post our chat, Shelly. We got to post some of our chats.
Michael was having a bit of a spiral.
I fucking love Videodrome so much because, I felt like it was a very hopeful one. Crimes of the Future, after this conversation, I'm feeling like, oh God, that was a really... this is a really uplifting film for these times that we're in.
A little bit. Like, imagine a world where you can treat your own cancer and turn it into performance art in order to, like, I mean, yeah, you need a bio bed to, like, fucking eat food, but, you know, at least.
But those are probably only $3,000. So,
You know, with a broker fee of $6,000. Yeah. But that's totally fine. Like, if you have money. If you have money, you'll be okay.
As it always goes. Yeah, it is interesting you bringing up the idea of him working on something with social media, because my you know, immediate thought was like, oh, every movie that like deals with social media, like they can't make it visually interesting. But I mean, you could say that about TV or about video games, but he does make it visually interesting because he physicalizes it.
Mm-hmm. And I also think it's really interesting that he chooses, and I didn't do enough research on Crimes of the Future to say this concisely, but Videodrome, of course, of an era where it's all on-screen effects. He did the same for Existence despite having CGI. He does use CGI in the film, but only to enhance what's already on screen, not to create something from scratch. So I think that's so funny that like he's this person who's like kind of inherently like he's okay with technology. He likes how it advances his art form, but he doesn't elect to choose it. And I think Crimes of the Future like probably does the same thing. I think there's still a lot of practicals, specifically in regards to the body. I just didn't do my research to know if like all of the technology that you see in the film is on-screen effects or if it is just like visual computer stimulated. So
I should have
read into that, but I like that he elects to continue to use on-screen effects as much as possible. I think it's sweet.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, and like I find it very charming that like in Crimes of the Future, like the TVs that like they use in their presentation are very kind of like old-fashioned TVs. Like something, and they're in like all these sort of like physical spaces together, which is so interesting. Like because I think it filmed during COVID, so But so, yeah, but they, I think especially, you know, in our COVID world of where we're all more on our screens and less like in person together, like there's something very charming about him having like it was shot in like a warehouse and all these people are physically there together and they've got these like old fashioned TVs. Like there is a kind of like throwback quality to it.
Yes.
Even as it's looking towards like the, you know, potential horrors of our future.
Yeah. Surgery orgy scene where everybody's just chopping into each other.
Yeah.
I really fucking loved that scene so much. It was so fun. And I'm very curious to know some of y'all's favorite images or imagery from these three movies. I've talked a lot about the tumor scene in Videodrome, but the scene in Crimes of the Future where there's like one lady cutting into another woman's foot and you could like hear the bone, the blade scraping the bone, and no one feels pain, so it's fine, everyone's fine. Everyone's like, oh yeah, you can cut into me, like oh god, I loved it so much. I thought it was so interesting. Very curious to know what stuck in y'all's brains.
I love that foot scene. I'm actually someone who like there's very few things on screen that I have trouble watching, like I just it irks me in a way. One of them is like feet and Achilles heels.
Yeah,
that foot scene totally works for me. Again, I think it's this premise that like it is a consenting act, like both parties are consenting to the act. I love the body modification of the forehead for Léa Seydoux's character too, as like an act of, you know, doing that for herself. Like she becomes enamored with this idea of doing that for herself. I thought was really poignant. God, there's so many moments in Existence. I feel like it's hard to choose one, but it's hard to forget about Jude Law sucking the flesh off the bones to make his bio gun.
Yes.
It's such a funny moment. And it's just like totally weird, but you know, he had to suck something to shoot that scene, which I really enjoy.
That's so good. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's a cliche one, but I mean, the Videodrome image of the undulating TV. God, yeah, that's so, it's so sensual and it's so bizarre, like, because I mean, just the sort of like juxtaposition of this, like, I don't know how you make a TV seem sexual, but it does.
And whipping the TV, that whole action is so great.
It's so good.
Okay. Sorry.
Oh, no. And I was just going to say, and I agree with you, Michael, that having the premise of them not feeling pain in Crimes of the Future, like, I think otherwise I would get squicked out by seeing them sewing the lips shut.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is fine.
They love it.
Cool. He loves it. He's having a great time. I'm very curious. This is a question that just popped into my head. If y'all could get, like, any kind of Cronenbergian, like, body modification or transformation, what would you want to happen? How would you like to transform? I think about this a lot.
Oh my god, it's an amazing question.
I think about this shit all the time.
I'm like, I'm embarrassed that one like immediately came to mind that is like so
Yes.
It would have like a self-pleasuring clitoris so you can hands-free masturbate.
Oh my God. Whoa.
Oh my God. Cool.
That's so cool.
I can't believe that's the very first thing that came to mind.
Incredible. You know, there's like sex toys that kind of look like Cronenbergian ideations. Yeah. Like there's that like clit sucking vacuum toy that like kind of looks like a gaming console from Existence meets something else. It's like kind of funny that sex toys are starting to look like the biotechnology of movies.
Something to think about putting in your pocket.
Also, I saw a foot. It's a foot pocket pussy. Sorry for the terminology. I used to work in a sex store. So the sole
pocket pussy. Whoa.
You would think the top of the foot, it's a foot with an ankle. Yeah. You would think the top of the foot might maybe that's nope. It's the sole of the foot is where the labia is of the sex toy. And I got this advertised to me on fucking Instagram and I almost lost my shit. I screenshotted it. I'll send it to you.
Oh my God.
Very weird Cronenbergian sex toys out there.
Yeah, Tarantino and Cronenberg collide.
Okay, but I have an answer to your question now, Michael.
Yes. Yes.
If I could take something from a Cronenberg film and apply it to myself, it would be one, Jeff Goldblum inside of me. Okay. Put that aside.
Boom!
just had to put that out there. Okay, the no longer feeling pain element of Crimes of the Future, but. Yes. In Crash, because I would want to crash a car with James Spader, as you both know very well.
Oh my God.
I'd like to have that last scene with him. I would like to. But the ability to not feel pain, I hope, you know, you still feel pleasure in a different way, but crashing the car would then be the pleasure point. So that would be my application.
Wow. Ooh, that's good.
Oof.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like this.
I'm going to go with that. I'm feeling good.
That's
about
a really, really good one.
Thank you so
that's
much.
That's great.
Thank you for the question. It's an incredible question.
Of course.
This is a great question.
Of course.
So, what do you think, Michael?
I think about these kinds of things a lot. So I feel like it's a different thing every day. But now that I'm thinking about what I would just, I'm thinking a lot about choosing the person I'd want to be. And there are a couple things that I would want. One is four extra limbs, like something between I love spiders, so I would love like a subset of arm of like a second set of arms, but they could have a couple less fingers. They don't have to be quite as big as my current arms, but like a second set of arms, and then maybe a set of something that is between arms and legs. I don't know. Something that's between, like they can function as legs if I need to like stand in a different way, but they can also function as arms should I need, you know, the strength.
Imagine buying shirts.
And then, oh yeah, that would be fun because then I can just cut holes into my shirts. Yeah. I would just have things tailored very well, like tar, like Lydia Tarr. And then the other thing that I would want, very inspired, Shelley, by the self-pleasuring clitoris, I would want a penis where the head can also open up, where like the eye can open up and become a mouth. And then inside the mouth, there's like an optional eyeball, kind of like a H.R. Geiger. Like I got an eyeball down there.
Like the head in like Alien when it bursts out of the stomach.
Yes, precisely like that. Maybe with its own, you know how there are some animals that have like, there's like octopus can have like three brains or something like that.
Yeah.
Like another brain, like an actual brain, an actual conscious. Because I feel like that would be cool.
Wow. So is your consciousness also perceiving the consciousness of the penis brain?
They can interact, but they are not the same.
Wow.
That's a movie, by the way.
That's a movie.
I had to think about it. It's called Bad Biology by Frank Hellenlauter, and my friend Andrew Reed is in it, and he has He has like a monster dick that thinks for itself. It doesn't have the optional eyeball. But it's like a woman whose vagina like controls her and she like ravages and destroys men. But she meets her match when she meets this guy with like a monster dick that like it thinks for itself.
That's bad biology.
What a good pairing for this episode.
Seriously. Well, speaking of pairing, so we're not going to do a game today, but Michael, you had a fun idea of how we could finish out the episode.
Oh my God. Yes. So instead of pairings or a game, I think it would be interesting to talk about movies that you could chase, like chasers, to go with this week's films. Because after you've seen the human body get, you know, shredded up, torn apart, twisted, yeah. You know, a little aftercare might be something that could, you know, calm you down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not that anything really stirred me up. Just, you know. But one movie that I did watch with these was Rocky III.
hell yeah!
In the general body umbrella of movies, so you got your David Cronenberg, but you also got a little Flashdance, you know, a little Footloose, body movies, you know. But Rocky is probably one of my favorite ones about body changes and stuff. And I think Rocky III is the most deeply erotic of the Rocky movies. Those motherfuckers love each other. But the only way that they can communicate it is through the sport of boxing. I can read more books and find a better way to say it. But I fucking love those movies. I fucking love the workout scenes. They're so fun to watch, inspirational. The run on the beach.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Such a good answer.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's a good one. What about you, Lindsay?
I have a few. I would say my first number one comfort film of all time is Stephen Chow's Kung Fu Hustle. Easily.
Oh, fun.
So, like, when I'm depressed or when I've seen something that's so, like, you know, just traumatic for whatever reason. Like I saw a really brilliant film, but it was really hard to sit through because it was based on real crimes. Ali Abbasi's Holy Spider. And afterwards I was just so disturbed that I was like, oh, what am I going to do? Oh, I'm going to put on a Stephen Chow movie because he's the best. Kung Fu Hustle just always makes me smile. And it's also, like, funnily enough, it's very much a body film. Like, you see bodies transform, yeah. You see them get crushed in cartoonish ways, but it's always nice. It's funny, and, like, no one truly dies. Like, people just kind of get hurt and then they're back up again. So that would be one. And then I'd probably pick like most Studio Ghibli films, not all, because like Grave of the Fireflies, absolutely not, but like Princess Mononoke, Kiki's Delivery Service, Ponyo. Like, I would feel good, you know, and comforted having that on. And then I think a verse to that is just my favorite film, one of my favorite movies of all time, Wayne's World. Canadian Mike Myers just doing his thing. It's so sweet. I can quote the whole film. Like, put on something that's familiar after you've been traumatized is like a good thing in and of itself.
I love that. I've got two that are very different, but they both deal with bodies in some way that I think is an interesting kind of like counterpoint to, you know, the horror elements in Cronenberg. One is, I think this is how you pronounce his name, Radu Jude, who I really like as a director. He has got a 2016 film called Scarred Hearts that's based on apparently a pretty famous Romanian novel that I was not familiar with before I saw this movie. But it's about like a writer who had this like debilitating illness, which, you know, basically like froze his body largely, and he's living in the sanitarium. But it's like, you know, a movie full of men with like what I guess you might say have like broken bodies in some way. But it's so full of life, and it's like very like, you know, it's a lot of people finding like joy and community within these like physically painful circumstances, which I think was really nice. And it's beautifully shot. And then the other is the 1945 movie The Enchanted Cottage, which I first learned about because on Turner Classic Movies, Whoopi Goldberg picked it as one of her favorite movies.
I'm wearing the shirt today.
Michael constantly wears the Whoopi Goldberg shirt on the recordings. But yeah, you know, it's like a golden age Hollywood movie with Dorothy McGuire and Robert Young. Mm-hmm. That's about you know, a plain woman.
I love a movie about a plain woman.
Right? And she, you know, and she meets this handsome man who goes off to World War II, and he returns with his face all scarred up. You know, and he's bitter about it at first, and she's shy and self-loathing, but they meet in this cottage, and suddenly they're beautiful whenever they're in the cottage together.
Oh.
Like they think that it's like magic, and then they find out that like it's just that they love each other. It's not that like their faces changed. It's just that because they love each other so much that like that's how they envision each other. So
oh.
Yeah. The idea of like the mutability of like bodies and how we perceive them, I think, is something interesting in that movie.
That's
oh my God. That's
yeah, it's okay. Very sweet. Whoopi's got good taste.
That is oh God. I gotta check her list. I gotta yeah. Is it okay if I throw two more on there?
Please.
Yeah, please.
All right. So I'm thinking about The Lure.
I love The Lure.
The Lure is very fun. For those of y'all that don't know, it's about a pair of mermaids that join a cabaret, and one of the mermaids is like, oh my God, I love this guy. And the other mermaid is like, oh my God, I'm so hungry for these people. I love these human beings. I love eating them. So there's that one. I fucking love cannibalism in movies. I love seeing human beings eat other human beings in movies. And then the other one is The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, I love a movie about a human living person who is in love with a ghost that cannot touch them. I love that movie. It's so sad but yeah. Sweet. Yeah,
good choices all around.
Yeah, great choices, everyone. God.
Michael, this was a great idea to lift our spirits at the end after some serious discussion.
Like, honestly, I don't even think my spirit was so much, like, it wasn't dragged down. It was just, like, It was, like, very intense.
Yes.
Very intense thing. Like, I was like, we watched three of these motherfucking movies in one week. Normally, you know. You know, but it was it was fucking nice. It's like running a marathon, you know.
Yeah.
And after you run a marathon, you go, you know, get some French fries, you know. Have a milkshake.
But
you
know? I think
that's exactly
it's also
what I want to do.
Yeah, I think it's also important to like frame the films with that kind of like dialogue about like they can be inherently hopeful. You know, there's ideas in them that feel really heavy, but this is a very approachable way to kind of talk about maybe even our own existential fears about the future, about where we're at currently. There's something really comforting about watching other characters go through very surreal, techno-surrealist versions of that and coming out the other end either resolved with where they're at or not at all, or at least coping with it in a way that like kind of helps us make sense of our own realities. So I think, and I contend that these three films are a great gateway to Cronenberg, and hopefully this discourse has helped someone maybe approach them in a way that they wouldn't have previously.
Well, I will say it's definitely helped me. I am excited to watch more David Cronenberg movies for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to approaching The Fly and not feeling like I'm going to throw up my double cheeseburger.
It's sexy. It's so sexy.
It really I'm excited for a sexy movie where a guy turns into a fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotta love it. Well, on that note, Lindsay, this was so fun. We were so happy to have you back.
It really has been great, Lindsay.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I'm so grateful you guys took the time to watch the films and like this hilarious idea that we had about doing three in one. Thank you for asking me to come back and do this insane episode with you both. I really appreciate it.
Oh, we're going to have to. There's so many things that we got to talk about.
We're doing this again. Come on.
We got to talk about the Jude Law stuff. We got to talk about Cronenberg again. If there's another trilogy that you could recommend, I want to know. You know, what are the other trilogies in his canon? Who knows? Who knows what they may
be? You could make an argument for the Viggo Mortensen era. Well, now he has four films with him. So you could say it's like a foursome. Or you could do the official three that he did, like one after the other. Yeah. East Promises, History of Violence, and Dangerous Method.
Holy moly.
Damn. We got so much more to cover.
The encouragement of riches, truly. Yeah.
So many riches. And there are even more riches on your TikTok and in your work that you're doing with Faye Pictures. So can you tell our listeners where they can find you on social media and also what you've got coming up that they should look out for?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. So you can find me online at Lindsay's Online, LINDSAYS Online. On TikTok, I talk about movies, and I also currently am talking about critical thinking. And then with Faye Pictures, we have a series coming out next month on Amazon and Super Channel called Streams Flow from a River. It's premiering April 1st. Please check it out wherever you can. And as of this weekend, it's March 11th when we're recording, my feature film, I Like Movies, is playing in theaters across Canada. We currently don't have a U.S. release date, but once we do, I'd be happy to share it. The film is about a kid in 2003 who works at a video store with dreams of becoming a filmmaker, but he has to learn not to be an insufferable asshole first.
Oh my fucking God. Oh my fucking
God. That's incredible.
I was homeschooled and I watched nothing but IFC Films.
Yeah.
This movie sounds like it's for me.
Oh, yeah. I think we can both relate to this. Shelly.
Oh, my God. Look, when there's a U.S. release, it's our responsibility to make Open everyone weekend. We know see this. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's so fabulous.
I miss the video store era so much.
We built our set from stuff that we found in an old Blockbuster that existed 3 hours away from Toronto. We basically brought a truck over, emptied out the store, and built our set on the other side of the city.
Yeah. Okay.
Amazing.
The next time we... All right, Lindsay, this is something else we got to talk about, but like... Sure. We all got to remember the video store era in a future episode. It was such a special time. And I feel like as millennials on the hinge between the world of physical things, going to the movie store, the video store, and the current world that we live in now, where everything is on demand, streaming, like you can watch TV whenever you want. You know, there's no schedule. I think it's important to remember the old world, the old things that we used to have.
Analog.
Well, we cannot wait to have you back to talk about this more. We can't wait to see your film. Michael, where can people follow us?
Y'all can follow us on all social medias at Everyone Is Hot Pod. That's every number one is Hot Pod. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can rank us, please give us 5 stars, okay? Nothing less than that.
Nothing less.
Or else, you know, I'm going to find you and you're going to, you know, explode into a bunch of little gross little pustules.
Yeah, exactly. We hope you have like a scanner's head go off if you're going to
go scan. You're going to go bang. You're going to go boom. You're going to go.
Well, for those who are good enough to give us 5 stars, what do we want them to do?
Oh, please. Stay horny.
Horny.
No sex.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.